So while they're having a go at these word searches and mazes, all to do with this story, the coming of the Magi, the coming of the wise men, let's just have a think together about that story. The Magi believed that a new star meant that a new king had been born. I wonder what they were expecting. Almost certainly a royal palace. They went first of all to Jerusalem, didn't they? They didn't follow the star all the way to Bethlehem. First of all, they stopped at the royal palace because they were expecting this new baby to be a king. Of course they were expecting a royal palace. But then, of course, we know how the star led them 6 miles down the road to Bethlehem. And we know how that story developed. But let's have a think about these travellers. These men in glittering velvet robes with the fake beards that we see in our nativity services at church. Sometimes even with a live camel. Though I'm pleased to say we didn't have the live camel here this year. Bearing gifts, they traverse the far. They follow the yonder star from the back of the church all the way to the front in our annual Christmas story. The Magi, or is it the wise men, or are they the kings? Maybe if Luke had told the story, we might have had more detail. Luke was a historian and is known for giving perhaps a little bit more fact. Matthew's sometimes a little bit more vague, sometimes a little bit mysterious. Now, Jesus was born in Bethlehem in Judea in the days of Herod. Wise men from the east came to Jerusalem. An intrigue swirls around these foreigners. Where did they come from? Over 12 countries apparently claim that the wise men came from their country in the first place. It's one of their sort of claims to fame. We don't really know, do we? Matthew calls them magi. But what does that really mean? For many, many years, Christians have been trying to nail this down. In 200, Tertullian was laying out an argument that the Magi were actually kings. But Calvin got really, really angry and called anyone who identified them as kings as grossly ignorant. A nice, generous comment there. The first century, Pliny the Elder wrote several chapters about these Magi. And he said, he detailed them in quite specific detail what they did, including pouring boiled earthworms into the ear to cure not an earache but a toothache. It sounds more like Harry Potter, doesn't it? But that was his understanding of what these magi were. But despite the disagreement, here's a couple of facts. The word Magnus is a Persian word. But they weren't confined to that part of the world. They were scattered all over that area. Philia, who is a first century Jewish historian, refers to Balaam, you know, the Balaam and the donkey from Numbers, as Magnus, as Magi. And various kings in the ancient world consulted these men because of their skills in understanding dreams and signs and stars. And this term Magi is the precise word used in Matthew's Gospel. It demonstrates that they did understand dreams. They did understand visions and following the star. When they arrived in Jerusalem, they said, "Where is he, born King of the Jews? We saw his star as it rose and have come to worship him." But these visitors were a blast from the Hebrews' past. The book of Daniel says how he and his companions spent 70 years exiled in the east amongst the Magi, and King Nebuchadnezzar would gather up the brightest and the cleverest people from the lands that he conquered and take them into the center of his kingdom to be advisors. And Daniel, Shadrach, Meshach and Abednego were some of these people. And they became magi. In Daniel 1 we say, "In every matter of wisdom and understanding about which the king questioned them, he found them 10 times better than the magi, than the magicians and the enchanters in the whole of his kingdom." So this whole episode, kind of with the Magi, has kind of got a biblical deja vu to it. You might know the story of Pharaoh and how he used the Magi to help him understand dreams. But of course, they couldn't understand the dream about the 7 little cows eating up the 7 big cows. And it was left to one of the Hebrews to help him identify that dream. Joseph, the Hebrew exile in prison, interpreted it through God. And in response, Pharaoh clothed Joseph as a king and the Magi had to bow before him. He was set over the land of Egypt. Long before Daniel, long before Jesus, the Magi were bowing to God's people. So whether we call these people in Matthew Magi, let's not be surprised that they're bowing before a Hebrew and heralding him as king. At Jesus' birth, we recognize how the tables have been turned. A star led the Magi into exile. And they didn't find somebody at the right hand of Pharaoh or Nebuchadnezzar, but a child on his mother's lap. And they bow and they worship and they become the first to recognize the end from the beginning. This child surpasses Daniel and Joseph, not only as the king of the Magi, the king of the kings, and perhaps for us, our king as well. But perhaps this word Magi is a little bit too foreign for us. But have no fear, wise men is a perfectly acceptable translation as well. The Hebrew word wise men is used much more frequently in the Old Testament to designate these advisers. Many of the church fathers, the early church fathers, saw significance in these wise men bringing gold and frankincense and myrrh. People like Justin Martyr said these gifts were particularly Arabian, and Martin Luther agreed with that. At first, they didn't consider this king to be God, but the unusual manner they took Jesus for a temporal king, just as the Queen of Sheba considered Solomon a king. But then they realized who Jesus actually was. And this story, echoed in the wise men, comes from that we need to look at 1 Kings 10. When the Queen of Sheba heard about the fame of Solomon and his relationship to the Lord, if you know the story, she gives him some hard questions. She challenges his wisdom, and she comes to Solomon and talks about all the things that are on her mind. And during his visit, the depth of his wisdom comes to light. It takes her breath away, and she lies her gold, her incense, her spices before him, and she blesses the Lord for making Solomon king. She recognizes God working through Solomon. Perhaps these wise men were recognizing God working through this baby. So maybe we prefer to call the visitors bringing gold, frankincense and wise men this Christmas time. But whatever we call them, we need to follow them, just as the Queen Sheba followed them across the wilderness in the search of the wisdom of the God of Jerusalem. However, as Matthew tells it, the wisdom of God isn't found in the king's palace in Jerusalem, but in the small town of Bethlehem. The little child is the wisdom of God. And just as Sheba prayed, because of the Lord's eternal love for Israel, he has made you king to maintain justice and righteousness. Those words echo with so much of Jesus' teaching. So we can call them Magi, we can call them wise men. But what of kings? After all, they always wear the crowns in our nativity play. We sing We Three Kings. And certainly the medieval church preferred this designation. But Matthew's Magi wouldn't have been the first people to be kings. Joseph and Daniel, Hebrew Magi, became elevated to royal status. And in the early second century, Tertullian recognized the Magi to be kings because he argued that they fulfill the prophecies of Solomon in Psalm 72. May the kings of Sheba and Seba present him gifts. And also from this evidence from Isaiah, nations will come into your light and kings to the brightness of your dawn. All from Sheba will come down bearing gold and incense and proclaiming the praise of the Lord. It's impossible, isn't it, to miss those clear parallels with the beginnings of Matthew's gospel. So if we prefer to call the Magi kings, we need to recognize that they're proclaiming the return of Jerusalem's royal treasures from exiles. As these kings travel the road from Babylon to Jerusalem, they bring back the gold, the frankincense and the myrrh that was taken from David's house. This is what Isaiah promised would happen. The same foreigners that looted Jerusalem would one day rebuild her walls and the king would serve her. Matthew shows us what Nehemiah and Ezra experienced under Cyrus, that was a mere foretaste of the riches that God would return to his Messiah in Jerusalem. At Christmas, the kings bring the treasures back to Jerusalem. It signifies the beginning of this eternal restoration, the rebuilding of David's people. Call them magi, call them wise men, call them kings. When it comes to Matthew's Christmas story, the more the merrier, because each label shines a light on a different part of the story. Whatever we choose to call them, these men were the first in the canonical New Testament to bow and worship the Lord. As we come into the new year, what an amazing thought to take with us, how they came and travelled to worship God. And perhaps this new year, we need to be thinking about how we can come and travel and worship God in all we do in our lives, how we can follow him, how we can live for him, how we can share his good news with others. Let's take that as our prayer this new year, to follow the example of the Magi, the wise men, the kings, and bring what we can before Jesus. Amen.